Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. Sean Cantwell, Adam Harahan, your local alternative is Solid State Radio. It was an ugly win yesterday, but it was still a win. You'd love to see it. I mean, you didn't like to see it for the first about, 57 minutes or so of the game. Certainly not while Jared Goff is throwing pick after pick, and then, of course, the fumble. We'll get to all that in due time. But I feel like we find ourselves here at a crossroads as we get into the Thanksgiving Day game. Even though you currently sit at 8-2, just, I believe, a game shy of the best record in football. And that could very well change depending on the outcome of tonight's Monday Night Football matchup with the Eagles and the Chiefs.
That's going to be a good game.
That could be a potential, well, a Super Bowl rematch already, and possibly a Super Bowl preview for this year. And if Philly loses, you are now tied for first place in the NFC. Win Thursday, and you have first place in the NFC, sole possession of.
Well, you're forgetting about the big storyline, the Kelce brothers, head-to-head.
Yeah, there's that. And that's probably not even the big storyline.
The winner takes home Taylor Swift.
Is that how that works? Like, yep. They just get the share cut, you
know. Presenter, like the Lombardi trophy.
Like Roger Goodell is going to come out there and present the winner with Taylor Swift at the end of the game. Can you imagine just how great that would be for the ratings?
Oh, yeah.
But sitting after that loss, that win yesterday for the Lions, one that I think all of us were pretty convinced was going to be a loss. Like, I'm sitting driving up to, I went and stopped by the Hitchin Post yesterday for their little 40th anniversary shindig. It's a good time. Walked out with a shot glass and everything. It was great.
Cool.
But I'm listening to the game on the radio on our sister station, WTGV 97.7 FM, and, we're just Jared Goff could seemingly do no right for a good chunk of that game, and then the Craig Reynolds fumble on the kick return. Like, everything seemed to be going against this team in just every way possible, and then but somehow with like 3-4 minutes left in that game, all of a sudden, Jared Goff turns into the Jared Goff that we all know and love and comes back and actually starts making things happen. Like, honestly, after the third interception, I thought, this game's over. There's no way they come back from this. How could they possibly come back from this? And then Goff leads him downfield. 32 yards to J-Mo. Jameson Williams going out there doing something. It seems like whenever you need a big play, At the, you know, most possible convenient time, all of a sudden J-Mo's starting to come through for you. And it's really just a beautiful thing to see that those two finally seem to be getting that connection, that chemistry together that we were kind of worried early in the season that they weren't going to get, and they finally seem to have a little something going there now. It helps certainly when you've got Amon-Ra St. Brown, who is no doubt was kind of out there as the decoy, the guy that he assumes going to be the target, and allows Goff to have to hit a, you know, pretty wide open J-Mo and get that touchdown. And then the defense has been atrocious for a good chunk of the day. Like, they kind of, Aaron Glenn, we've talked about it, he has trouble scheming against mobile QBs, and Justin Fields certainly fits that description. And you need more than anything, you need a three and out. If they get a first down, even, this game is probably over ultimately. And somehow they manage to get exactly that. They get their three and out. Fields attempts a pass that ended up being incomplete. They run Khalil Herbert and get a whole 1 yard out of two plays and end up forcing the punt. And then somehow they with all their timeouts and the 2 minute warning, Goff runs this thing back downfield, a bunch of good looking passes, setting up the Montgomery touchdown ultimately. And they did even manage to get the 2-point conversion to make sure that at the very least the Bears weren't going to be able to win this thing in regulation with, you know, 29 seconds left on the clock. And then your defense coming up big at the end, making sure that that wasn't going to happen with that nice little that sack of Fields that turned into a fumble that turned into a safety.
Nicely done.
It's, again, it's an ugly win. And I get that there's probably reasons for concern here, but you're not going to sit here and be mad after a win. I'm willing to accept that sometimes good teams are going to have ugly games. It just, you have to actually, when you manage to still pull out the win, like, this is the kind of game that the same old Lions would have lost all day. Like, they wouldn't, they maybe would have got the first touchdown to come back, but they're definitely not getting the second. They're probably not even forcing the punt. They're not forcing the three and out there. Or it's, worse yet, you probably would have seen them give up the touchdown in the end instead of getting that sack and the safety.
It's a win, and it looks good on the scoreboard. But, and I'll put Michigan in this pile too. I mean, it doesn't make me feel real good about the next game because, I mean, with the Lions, that's two barely win kind of games. They had problems with the Chargers. They had problems with the Bears. Michigan had problems with Maryland. And it is a win. Chalk it up as a win, but it makes you real nervous for the next game.
Well, I will excuse the Chargers one because at least your offense was still very much functional that day. Like, I'm not going to complain too much about that. As far as, I mean, you were playing against a team who, Justin Herbert's still a pretty damn good quarterback, and Brandon Staley is the only coach in this league who is as gutsy and reckless, quite frankly, as Dan Campbell is. So that thing was destined to be a shootout from the get. And on offense, you did what you needed to do. You were the last team with the ball, and you managed to get that last score and do what needed to be done. Here, there are certainly cause for concern. The defense didn't always hold up as well as you would like until you absolutely needed them to do so. And Goff kind of he had an off game. You're going to have that. Not every game is going to be your best game. Like, you're going to have that occasional just clunker of a game, even against a Chicago team that is basically given up. And despite that, he still managed to give you two touchdowns and put you in a position for Montgomery to get a third. So, I mean, realistically, I can't be, while Goff's play was not good for, like I said, the first 3.5 quarters of this game, ultimately, I'm not going to be overly. I'm not going to sit here and reinforce the Goff haters like, oh, never should have traded Stafford for this guy. I told you he was never going to be anything. Like, no. It's one bad game. I'm willing to overlook. Like, considering the body of work as a whole this season, really.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to. This ain't going to set off any alarms for me. And I still think there's no reason you don't beat Green Bay on Thursday. You're at home. Green Bay is very much not a good team this year. They're arguably not really much better than the Bears. Certainly by record, they're not a whole lot better. They're coming into this thing 4-6, and you're favored by, I think, like 7 in this thing. I don't see any reason that you're going to lose this, and we're worried about things that, honestly, I don't think are going to come into play until you play a real team in the playoffs. Like, we've looked at that schedule. Dallas is the only team on the regular season that I'm concerned about in any way, shape, or form. You're looking at it, and I think there's any one of these games that are remaining here are entirely winnable. Like, there's no reason you can't beat the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings lost yesterday to a putrid Denver team. Like, the Broncos, they're kind of a mess. And Minnesota went there and lost. I don't see any reason you can't beat them. Like, the Josh Dobbs magic is starting to run out. Like, is it certainly concerning when it comes to getting to the playoff, you know, when we get to the playoffs, that these defensive issues and the difficulty in stopping a mobile QB could really come into play? Oh, certainly. But right now, I'm willing to just enjoy the fact that You won. You're in position to be the top seed in the NFC if things go right tonight and then Thursday. Weirdly enough, me being the kind of pessimist of this radio show, I don't find myself being able to get too worked up about it. And I think there's certainly more cause for celebration than concern here.
Well, I think it would have been a worse kind of feeling if the Lions had had a lead through the game and let the Bears come back. But it was more the Lions were down and fought back.
Right. And I feel like that counts for a lot. The fact that, like I said, this wouldn't have happened with SOL. Like, this is a team, in years past, this would have basically been that, well, the game's over and there's still time left in the fourth quarter. No, they're not coming back from this. It's the Lions. Like, you finally are at a point where we don't feel like that after every game, any game when they're trailing. Like, you always still feel like you have a chance. And that in itself is something that obviously we're not used to. Any more than we're used to seeing this team start a season 8-2, mostly because it hasn't happened in 62 years, apparently.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of the JFK was president last time it happened. There were racial injustice was happening.
Yeah, I mean, you...
Glad that's not happening anymore.
It was a different time. But no, as much as... It scared me a little bit watching the defense kind of being mediocre at best until the very end of that game. And as much as I, as far as Goff goes, I'm not concerned at all. Like, it was not good to see that yesterday, but it was nice to see them, you know, gut out a win despite it. I'm not concerned particularly for Goff going forward, to be entirely honest with you. The defense, okay, maybe a little bit scared there, but that's about it. Much stuff to do today. Stick around. It is happy hour at your local alternative Solid State Radio. Gaslight Anthem at your local alternative Solid State Radio. It's happy hour. Should we talk about Michigan for a moment? How worried are you right now with Maryland and then getting ready to go up against the only real challenge you're going to have this season the week after?
I'm nervous. I mean, part of me is like, see, it had nothing to do with the signs. Because, I mean, if they were stealing team signs, they would have access to that information with or without Harbaugh. Harbaugh wasn't there.
Well, once they figured it out, like, I think teams have changed up their signs now, so they no longer have that information.
Yeah, maybe. I think NCAA is just like, oh, my God, Auburn's not involved. Alabama's not involved in all the talks. We're thinking all of our revenue. We gotta get rid of these Michigan upstart people.
Michigan upstart people, like, you guys aren't the privileged of the college football class. Like, say, like, here in Ohio State saying they're, you know, a plucky group of upstarts. Jesus. I found it interesting, by the way, that after all this fighting, there was going to be this huge old lawsuit and challenge and everything else from Michigan and the alumni and Harbaugh didn't do anything wrong, and we're going to fight this thing, and then... Would you look at that? Friday morning, they decided they weren't going to appeal it after all. They dropped their case against the Big Ten. Like, oh, guess we're going to start. Which conveniently happened to happen the same day that, A, they fired their linebacker coach, who apparently was also in cahoots with Connor Stallions. And then you have a report coming out that there's Michigan boosters who are paying for Stallions to go and do all his surveilling. It's almost like they realize that they're about to get caught doing some real you-know-what, and figure they better drop their appeals lest the NCAA drop the effing hammer on them.
They all do it.
They don't all do it like this, man. I hate to tell you. And I was inclined
they just got caught.
And I was inclined to believe that at the start, to be quite honest with you. I was willing to excuse it to be the boys will be boys, Harbaughs will be Harbaughs.
That's right.
But, you know, now there's no way around that. Like, you're basically... They've now admitted guilt without actually admitting guilt. Like, they're not getting out of this. And now you've got the biggest game of the year coming up, and you looked less than stellar against, checks notes, Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland, they haven't been the laughable laugh riot that we're used to.
But they're still not particularly good.
They're not that good. I mean, regardless if they would have beat the living pants off Maryland or not, I'm still nervous about Ohio State because we've seen this movie script way too many times. Michigan plays all these cupcake games. They may or may not do well against State, and then they just lay down and show their belly to Ohio State. We've seen it.
No, absolutely you've seen it. It's certainly been a thing, and it's not as though Ohio State, like right now, they come in to this game, obviously also undefeated, but they came in blowing the F out of Minnesota 37-3 last week.
Yep.
They've won all of their games pretty convincingly thus far. They beat Penn State by 8. They beat Wisconsin by 14. Rutgers by, 19, which of course they should because it's effing Rutgers. Like, the last really close game that Michigan's played was against Notre Dame. And they, at the time, were a ranked team. And they beat them by 3. And that was back in, like, September. When they took on Maryland, they stomped the crap out of them. Like, this, you hate to say, has to be at least somewhat concerning here that...
Oh, yeah.
That Ohio State is coming in as hot as they've been. Meanwhile, Michigan, it seems like the wheels are starting to... There's at least that... The loose wheel on the shopping cart that just doesn't want to go the same way as the other three.
If
the wheels aren't coming off, there's at least one that's locked up.
Yep. I mean, that's there's no two ways around it. I mean, Ohio State is ranked second over Michigan being ranked third. It's not looking good. I mean, it's going to be a good game.
Oh, it's going to be a great game.
Michigan's still favored for whatever it's worth, only by 3.5, but.
Well, Vegas does like a good home team.
Yep.
Like that is always seemingly a, like, if the two teams are fairly evenly matched, tie goes to the home team. That's just kind of the way this goes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it necessarily, if I think that they're going to win, I guess we'll talk about that plenty on Friday. But man, if you're a Michigan fan right now, There's got to be a little bit of, at least a little bit of worry, a little bit of doubt starting to seep in here.
Yep. Absolutely. Getting nervous. Kind of like, last year around this time, was it Blake Corum went out with an injury?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Kind of knocked the wheels off, took the wind out of our sails just a little bit.
Just a bit, yeah. That did kind of end up going that way. But, still pulled it off, but it's just... Just not so much in the playoffs.
Right.
We'll see what happens, but I feel like there's real reason right now if you're a Michigan fan to be a bit concerned what's going to go down. Here's Fall Out Boy. It's Solid State Radio. The main and taking back Sunday, your local alternative Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour. He's Adam Hairhawk. I'm Sean Cantwell. And I swear to God, I didn't think I'd actually hear you utter these words that you'd be glad if the Wings never... did another one of those Sweden trips again because, you were so excited Wednesday when afternoon hockey was going to be a thing. Like,
I love afternoon hockey. There's going to be another game, it was Sunday against Minnesota, something like that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But the whole gimmicky games over in Sweden, and I guess the Swedish people, those Swedes, they liked it.
Good for them, but I don't care about them.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, keep sending us your best hockey players here.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, make sure that keeps happening. But it's... For some reason, the Wings just don't do well on the national stage. You give them a national game. We used to be on NBC. Now it's, on whatever, ESPN or whatever. They just don't do well.
Doesn't seem that way.
I mean, I don't know if it's... They get sidetracked... Maybe there's, I don't know. They're too young of a team to be able to work past that kind of stuff. I don't know.
They hadn't played a game in a week. They're not playing a game for a week after. It's like, throwing off the schedule, the routine like that, screws some teams up, unless you're Toronto, apparently. Stupid bastards.
Yeah. But, that's Bettman's argument and the owner's argument for why the NHL hasn't been involved in the Olympics. One of the reasons.
But we're going to do stupid things like this. We're going to randomly send mid-season games over to foreign countries, but we can't have NHL players in the Olympics.
Correct.
Make it make sense to me, dude.
I can't. I don't want to send them over there for Sweden either. I mean, Olympics, that's a little different.
Right. At least then, you know, okay, it's a two-week break. There's still players that you recognize that are all still playing. Everyone, it's not like everyone's just taking the 2 weeks off for the most part, unless you're just the unlucky bastard that didn't get picked to play with your team.
Right. Right. And that happens. But I don't know. I mean, I would think that, especially if you have like one of your star players that's a little banged up, have taken some of that time off to recoup, I think it would have to help you.
You would think that. Instead, we're just sending guys out to Sweden for a couple days, and once they finally get adjusted from the jet lag, here, practice. Here, have two back-to-back hockey games. Here, let's fly you back across the other side of the effing world all in the span of a week.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, completely throw off through. I mean, if you're doing it for a, you know, the prolonged span of time that it would be for the Olympics, that's one thing. And it's everybody doing it, too. So, I mean, even that's a different thing. Instead of we just cherry-pick these four teams to have to go over there and play this, you know, round-robin nonsense, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I don't see what the gain is. And also, it's Sweden. Sweden's already pretty passionate about hockey. They're certainly aware of the game. I don't think you're really building up any more of a fan base by having this going on. Like, they already go crazy for, you know, the Swedish Elite League and all that over there. It's not like they're a market where no one's ever thought to reach out to them for. I mean, a lot of teams back here didn't think to draft Swedes for the longest time because they're idiots. But, you know, certainly we were on the front, cutting edge of that.
Yes.
So I don't see how this is something that's growing the game or even getting generating interest in a market that didn't care about it, because Sweden already cared a lot about hockey.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe it's just
like you know,
throwing them a bone, maybe. But I don't
be like throwing a mid-season baseball series in Japan.
Yeah,
like they're already baseball crazy over there. It's not really growing the game anymore to like take your players out of their routine for a week and a half or whatever to do that. Like same kind of thing here.
Yep, I don't get it. Like when they send the NFL sends football games to London.
Well,
NBA wants to send things to China. What is your end game? What do you want? Do you want to have an NBA team in China? Is that really what you want? Do you want a hockey team, an NHL team in Sweden? Then what's the point?
Like, I almost understand it more with the NFL and the NBA because they're not already targeting markets where the game is currently super popular. Although I don't know, the NBA in China also
NBA
already
is pretty
huge
in China,
over there too. The NFL is not as big in Europe, though.
No.
So, I mean, I guess from that standpoint, it makes sense. But, like, what are you accomplishing by sending mid-season games to Sweden? Really? Realistically?
I have no idea. Maybe just to give them a chance to see it up close and personal, which, you know, that's fine. But, I mean, then do that for preseason.
Right. Do that for the exhibition games that don't mean anything. Don't go upsetting the whole thing and making these teams do regular season games in the middle of the which I, like I said, I don't even like it when it comes to the London stuff. Like, we don't need to be flying teams over there to do these 9:30 in the morning games, you know, and doing this like 4, 5, 6 times a year, whatever it is.
The game's not over and I got to go to church.
Huh. You say that like you think I go to church. That's hilarious.
So, I don't, and then, you know, Jake Walman, he gets injured.
Right.
In that last game. He's day-to-day. He's questionable. He's not going to be at practice, but he's questionable for Wednesday's game against New Jersey. So
that's concerning because, you know, Walman has been – I dogged on Jake Walman a lot last year. I did. I absolutely was just not a – I wasn't a huge fan. I wasn't – but watching him this season, like, he's really
– Four goals, 3 assists.
Yeah, like, he's already on pace to, double, maybe triple his whole points scored from last year? Like, probably at least double? Like, he's doing quite well. He's and on a line where you're not expecting a huge amount of offensive production. You have been getting it from him and, like, those other role players like him. So that is rather unfortunate to see him getting knocked out for an extended, especially as a, you know, as a defenseman putting up the points that he has been.
Yep. And being a +5 as a defenseman, that is definitely a good sign. I mean, as far as...
How many years do we watch teams that there wasn't a single defender that was a plus at all?
Negative double digits.
Like, how many times did we see that? And now we've got a guy, he's actually, although, I mean, for whatever plus or minus is actually worth, Ben Sherratt's a plus six right now.
Yeah. I mean, I read
Petrie's somehow not a negative. Explain that to me.
Somehow is a negative?
Is not.
Really?
He's at zero.
He's just even.
How is that even possible?
I don't know, because he spends most of the time in the box, probably.
that's also true.
I mean, well, Jake Walman, though, back to him for a minute. I mean, last year was his best year in the NHL. 63 games played, the most in his career. 18 points, 9 goals, 9 assists, for making himself a plus 10 for last season. So, I mean, I think he can do that again this year.
I would see no reason why he couldn't. Assuming this doesn't keep him out for an extended period, I would see no reason he can't surpass those numbers.
I didn't see the game because we were doing the show, but he crashed into the net, and I guess it looked pretty ugly.
It wasn't great from what I've heard. Like, I'm hoping, like I said, that it's not going to be a long-term injury for him, but, man, you hate to see it.
They're talking about day-to-day. He's probably going to miss practice, but he's questionable for Wednesday's game against New Jersey, and that's a good sign.
No, that absolutely is.
Austin Chernek gets tossed down to Grand Rapids.
Oh, Zarnik got sent down?
He got sent down, which there's speculations that Seidman Edvinson might be coming up.
I would be entirely fine with it. I would love to see that happen. Like, I didn't want to see him get sent down to start the year, honestly. And Zarnik, I mean, I thought he had put up more points than he had. No, he has a total of 1 assist so far this season.
But
he hasn't
seemed to be like a liability. Like, we've been kind of bagging on Jeff Petrie, and rightfully so, because the only time we ever see his name is when he's sauntering into the penalty box.
It does kind of seem that way, because it's never like a good impact that he's having on play. You're right. Zarnik had at least not been a net negative, but I'm excited to see what Edvinson can do.
Oh yeah. It's time. He's, what, 2 years ago? 2 seasons ago that they drafted him?
Yeah.
I think it's, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Likewise.
I'd like to see any goaltender come in and show us what they can do. Any of them.
Yeah, that would also be nice, because
Reimer's not doing it. Lion's not doing it. Ville Husso's not.
Husso's hurt right now.
No.
And he wasn't doing great before.
They got him.
Oh, now it wasn't an injury. It was his wife was having their kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. He wasn't doing great. Reimer actually, for what it's worth, his 6 games played, he's got a goals against a .230, which is by far the best of anybody on this team. Save percentage of .917.
It's not bad. Not bad.
You're not going to complain about those numbers. Lion so far doesn't seem like he's. But he's only had one. He's only played 1 game. Like, he's basically been riding the bench all season.
Right. I just with Reimer, I look at that last game where he let in 5 goals, and that did not help his save percentage whatsoever. But yeah, I'd like to see better from him. I mean, we don't have that A goalie, that grade A goalie. We have a bunch of B minuses.
Yeah, like it's very much, you know, goaltending by committee around here. That's just kind of how it is. Like, you don't have one guy who stands out enough, and, well, maybe you'll see that eventually if Casa ever gets called up to the show. Although I haven't been, you've probably been following him more in Grand Rapids than I have.
Casa is doing okay, but he's not putting up the numbers he did for the ECHL or the Brandon Wheat Kings and the WHL. Oil Kings, Edmonton Oil Kings. I knew there was a Kings in there somewhere.
Too many Kings in that league.
Too many Kings.
Too many Kings, not enough pawns.
I don't know how he's looking in Grand Rapids, but I know he's got some simmering to do.
Let me tell you, he's 22 games in, 3.16 goals against, 2-3 record with a save percentage of .898.
Not good.
Wouldn't put him as the worst goalie currently in Detroit, but still, for AHL numbers, you'd like to see a little bit better than that.
If you can't make it happen in AHL, how do you expect to do it in NHL?
Right. And they're going to have to lean on him a lot down there for right now, because their 1B to Casas 1A right now. This Michael Hutchinson is doing even worse.
Yeah, he is.
365 goals against, 882 save percentage. Like, it just hasn't been, he hasn't been doing well at all. Like, it's Casas' job, and like, as soon as he gets, you know, to where he's looking a little more comfortable down there, maybe you see a call up here. But, well, I don't expect you're going to see any ice time in Detroit from him this season.
No. Unless injuries just really plague this team, knock on wood, that it doesn't happen.
I don't think they'd be carrying three goalies on the roster currently if they had any intention of using Casa at the major league level this season.
Right. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I mean, if they keep – if the non-Reimer goalies keep performing as poorly as they have, I mean, maybe these things change, but I don't – unless him and Husso and Lyon both go down or something – like I don't see him making an appearance in the big club.
One more note before we go to break. Alexander Nedeljkovic, remember him?
Oh, Ned.
He scored a goal in the AHL.
He's back in the minors?
You should say that. He's back in the NHL. He played last night, got a shutout against the Vegas Golden Knights. Scores a goal and a shutout in the same week.
Nice. You just love to see
his grandkids are gonna be like, "Oh, he's gonna tell us that story again." Oh, thank you, Grandpa Dad. Thank you.
Who was he with again? You said he played against
Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's right.
Pittsburgh. Yeah, and they shut out the Vegas Golden Knights, who are looking a little more human like.
That's yeah. I mean,
nobody expects them to go 82-0. So, but I mean, still,
no, certainly not. But I did still expect them to be very much a top contender, and they are right. And they're still leading the Pacific Division right now by 3 points. They're still the best team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, yeah, and that's with Vancouver doing as well as they are, 12-5-1. I mean, who saw that coming? Raise your hand. I didn't think so. Put your hand down.
I don't remember if I did or not. No. I feel like I did. You know, I've been riding that. You know. That Pettersson train for a long time.
Yeah, you've been
the one hockey prediction I like completely and utterly got right, and I've never like let go of that.
Yeah, you're gonna really chase that high for as long as you can. But yeah,
because it was such like a when he came into the league, like, it was such a long shot there that he was going to be at the best rookie in that class. Like we talked about, he got mentioned a little bit, but not like to any great extent here. So when I got like. Holy hell. Also, Quinn Hughes looks like he's like a generational defensive talent, too.
Yeah. We
that helps.
Holland should have drafted him.
Yeah.
Edmonton at 5-10-1 for the season, as opposed to Arizona. Arizona 8-7-2. I just want to end with that one. Arizona's got over 500, and Edmonton is blank.
How long until Kenny Holland gets fired?
I would think if after this season, if things are... don't radically improve. Yeah, I think because his sacrificial lamb's already gone. Woodcroft is gone.
Right, which so. I don't feel like was entirely fair. Like I don't put it on Woodcroft that team is doing as bad as it is. Like you can only coach the players that you're given, man.
Yeah, I mean, and they're riding the high that they have two really good goal scorers in Draisaitl and McDavid. But I mean, it's a 20-person game.
Like, they never really built that great of a roster around them. And I know you're expecting Woodcroft to just be able to make magic happen because he has the two arguably best players in all the league. And a crazy thing right now, McDavid's not even in, like, the top three in points.
Nope.
Not even in the top three in points, not even in the top or in goals on his own team.
He is frustrated. You can tell.
Like, somehow Zach Hyman's leading the team in goal scoring, and McDavid is literally fifth in both goals and points.
I just think the defensemen for other teams have figured him out, and he's snake bit this year. He's a minus four.
It seems that way, but, man, like, they just – it's just not a deep team, and there's only one man you can really blame for that.
Yep.
I'm not just saying that because we're, you know, pissed at what he did to our team. But maybe a little bit. Yeah, okay.
Okay, all right, fine. We're pissed at him.
Yeah, we are. Hope you had fun there, but your time's about to run out in Edmonton, I have a feeling. If Like
if they miss the playoffs, he's gone.
Has to be. And at this point,
they're way.
Can they make the playoffs? Like, do you see them turning it around enough?
Absolutely. I mean, if Anaheim and Seattle, the wheels just fall off those teams, which is entirely possible.
I think
Edmonton catches fire, they could make it happen.
I think it could for the Ducks. I don't think it does for the Kraken. I also wasn't expecting the Kings to be doing quite as well as they have.
10-3-3. Good on them in L.A.
Yeah, like honestly, right now, I think it's a very real possibility that they miss the playoffs entirely. Would never have guessed that at the start of this year.
They're going to have to really shake things up. I can't remember who they named as their coach, but I don't really see him being the...
Chris Knobloch.
Knobloch, yeah.
And so far, the team is 2-1 with him, for whatever it might be worth.
All right.
We'll see if they get it turned around, but I don't feel like confident in that, dude. I really don't.
Nope.
It is happy hour. It's Solid State Radio. Stick around. Right. Space Hog at your local alternative Solid State Radio. It is happy hour. He's Adam Hairhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And, you know, I just got my first plane experience over and done with when we went on vacation a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and
did we talk about that? I mean, what your experience was with the whole thing?
It wasn't really that bad because I couldn't even see outside the windows. Like it was like I've been on buses that were less crowded than that damn thing.
Yeah, like, they really made planes uncomfortable.
They really have. It's quite impressive how much they've gone out of their way to do that. But you had a kind of a shall we say an am I the a-hole of sorts.
Yeah, it's one of those things
relating to plane etiquette.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where the headline makes you think, oh, this person is definitely an a-hole, but they're like, aha, you got to keep reading. So it goes like this. A woman has been praised for refusing to swap seats with a 10-year-old boy so he could sit with his parents on a 13-hour flight. The 23-year-old explained how she snagged a free first-class upgrade. First class? I've never been in first class. My parents, you actually have leg room. It's crazy.
What? That's insane.
Yeah.
I'm just baffled that such an option exists.
She was traveling to San Francisco. Thanks to her loyalty to the airline, she was able to get bumped up to first class. However, she wasn't the only passenger who unexpectedly ended up in first class, as a set of parents accepted the upgrade too, not knowing their 10-year-old son wasn't eligible for it. Taking to Reddit, she said, I had booked my tickets a year in advance, about a month or two before the trip. The airline called me, said they'd like to upgrade me to first class due to my points and being a member. So she'd have to. They say it's free, but you're using your points that you've accumulated. So
right.
I had never flown first class before, so to say I was excited was an understatement. I made sure to do everything possible in the lounge before my flight, and I was welcomed with such a comfortable setting for a 13-hour flight. About an hour into the flight, a flight attendant comes up to me and asks me if I'd be willing to swap seats with a 10-year-old boy who's in economy so he could sit next with his family in first class. Trying to persuade her to move, the flight attendant said she would be able to get a free upgrade on another flight or a full refund for this flight. A full refund? Okay.
I mean, that's tempting.
Okay.
13-hour flight, though.
Yeah. She added, I asked her if there was any chance I could stay in my seat because I generally thought I was being kicked out, and she said that the two parents and I were the only upgraded passengers on the flight. She said, this is still the person quoting, she said there was no other first-class seats available, so if there was to be any chance for the boy to sit with his family, it would only make sense for him to sit in my seat. However, the woman couldn't help but wonder why one of the parents didn't give up their own seat so their child could sit in first class with one parent while the other sat in economy.
How old is the kid again? 10?
10, yeah. She said if this was a different situation, such as they'd overbooked the first class and the boy had purchased a ticket, it'd be a different story, but I got this upgrade because of how much I fly on the airline. Also, I may have considered it if the parents had bought their tickets, but they hadn't either. No hate for the flight attendant. She was very polite and respectful during the entire ordeal. She accepted my decision and was very nice and said that everything was okay and they were going to figure it out. Never saw the parents. They were sitting away from me. I did get shamed by an old woman in the seat next to me who told me I made a child sit on her own for 13 hours. I get a 13-hour flight alone for a child is I get it that a 13-hour flight is scary for a kid, but I saw him walk up and down the aisles like every hour to meet his parents, so it wasn't like he was alone. So the parents are like, yay, we get to go up to first class. Sorry, Junior.
Yeah, how are the parents not the a-hole here and not the person who just accepted a upgrade on their flight? Like, yeah, you're the jerk for not giving up your seat and not the parents. Like, well, yeah, the little bastard can sit by himself and in economy, I guess.
Yeah, it's a 13-hour flight. He keeps coming up there. Hey, Mom and Dad, they're sipping champagne. They're like, oh, excuse me, flight attendant. It's talking to me again.
Remove this thing, would you?
Be gone. Yeah, I wouldn't, in my wildest dreams, think if anybody at my party, whether it's, you know, a kid of mine or, you know, anybody, you can't all go, then you don't all go. It's, you don't go. It's, you know, especially a 10-year-old kid.
No, definitely. I mean, I feel like I could be okay with it if it's just, you know, the couple split up or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't feel that bad about that. Like,
well, then that's simple.
Then, I mean, okay, you one of you goes up or not. Yeah. Okay, whatever. But
Mom sits back, joins a Mile High Club with somebody back there while the dad sits up there, and then, you know, they swap. Halfway through the flight, they swap.
Right, you know, whatever you got to do. But, like, the thing I don't like is the fact that they're just willing to leave the kid alone entirely.
Well, yeah, it's... Kids That's fly all the issue. Yeah, kids fly all the time by themselves, but it's not, because it's not like somebody's going to snatch the kid. They're up in the air. But still, it's, yeah, it's
fair, but a
D-bag move from the parents.
Yeah, but I mean, still, you're talking about leaving your kid alone, basically by himself with a bunch of strangers for 13 hours.
Yeah.
And also, when that kid just starts being an obnoxious bratty mess, which you know damn well is what's going to happen, then all the parents, you know, the people around him are pissed. Like, where's the parents here to do something about this little brat?
They're up in first class. You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, no, that makes you absolutely just the biggest a-hole in the world. This person, no, because you didn't want to give up your prime spot to, you know, to accommodate some little brat whose parents could have actually just been responsible and just done it themselves. Not feeling bad for I'm not shaming that person at all.
No, not at all.
I don't think they deserve that in any way, shape, or form.
Right. I mean, if I read the letter correctly, she didn't even see the parents. She didn't even know who they were. So it's not like they confronted her. It's like they would have accepted this good-natured whim. That's what am I trying
upgrade
to say? Yeah, and then not had said anything to her about it. Now, had they said, because I'm sure that was still, you know, a couple $100s, even though it was an economy class ticket, to be willing to have, you know, reimbursed for the entire flight, that might be something to think about.
That'd be a little bit different, certainly. Like, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm kind of torn as to which one of those I would have been, like, versus the, you know, well, I'll just take the free flight or whatever, the total refund, and save the money. Like, although 13 hours on a plane sounds like a lot. Like, the 2.5 I spent on that was enough, more than enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. In the economy, yeah. 13 hours up in the air anywhere. Even in first class, it's just like, I don't know. You hear about these over, you know, around the world flights, and it's like, I can't.
I wouldn't want to do that. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, man. The plane had to stink.
Oh, good Lord.
As soon as people get out, they just hose it down.
Right. Like, everything about that just sounds like it'd be hell.
No, it definitely would. 13 hours, you know, no. I would need a shower.
No. There's not a lot of, like, I'm already not a huge, like, fan of confined spaces and things anyway. Like, that would not be my idea of a good time. So, like, no, I feel like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be stuck in this damn tube for 13 hours. No, yeah, I'm taking the upgrade where I can get it.
Until the beverage cart comes around, it's like, okay, maybe we can handle it. Well, okay, we can handle this.
I mean, that's essentially what it would
take. And then Sean be like, getting off the plane. All right, man, we'll see you later. Yeah, I found you on Facebook. All right, yeah, let's go party. Hey, there's a bar right here in the airport. Come on, let's go. And you'd leave the flight. He'd leave the flight. How you doing? Leave the flight. And the flight attendants would be like, God, glad he's gone. Do we have any liquor left? Nope.
Nope. That was all of it.
Flying back somewhere. He's like, hi, can I get a Jack and Coke? I'm sorry. One of our passengers drank us out of Jack Daniels on the flight.
See, we didn't even have booze on the flight I went on. This is
really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, well, you didn't
offer us booze. It was literally just pop, fruit punch, or water. Like, what are we? What are we, back in kindergarten? Like, you start pulling out juice boxes? Like, what are we doing here?
Good Lord. Wow, when I flew to Florida, yeah, they couldn't wait to get the beverage cart out.
Yeah, no booze, none. Like I instead had to start getting plowed in the at one of the restaurants at the airport. And even then, I didn't do that so much because those were
like $15 drinks.
kind of, yeah. I will say, like, at the restaurant I ended up at, she poured heavy. Like, she was definitely pouring like it was a Saturday morning and I needed, you know, hair of the dog. Like, all right, you understood the assignment. Yeah. I'll give you that props for that all day long.
Yep.
It's happy hour. It's Solid State Radio. Happy hour at Solid State Radio. We're getting the hell out of Dodge, but a full hour of local original music comes your way next at a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. Back at it tomorrow afternoon at 3. See ya!